Okay, well, thank you for the invitation to speak. I've been enjoying this conference a lot, and I have enormous admiration for Michael Friedman. But I have to say that when preparing this talk, I was asking myself, what am I doing here, and what am I going to talk about? And so one answer to that question can be gleaned from this abstract from a paper of Friedman, Kataev, and Wang, where they talk about the most abstract reaches of theoretical physics has spawned topological models having all sorts of nice properties. And they are called topological quantum field theories, and these exotic systems are proved to be efficiently simulated on a quantum computer. So I've, at various points, had been involved in these kinds of topological field theories. And so it wouldn't make sense for me to talk about my latest paper on wall crossing of BPS states and n equals 2 field theories. What I thought I would do is bring you some news from those most abstract and exotic reaches of theoretical physics and report just on some general recent developments which have spawned a good deal of activity and excitement in the past few years. This is not coming with a warranty that it will be useful for quantum computation or condensed matter physics, but at least I've endeavored to choose some topics that share some points of contact with previous successful interactions. And I'll be expressing a point of view that's been influenced from discussions with these gentlemen here. So what are the sources of these developments? Well, one of them is a lot of activity in the recent past of centering around defects and boundary conditions in quantum field theory and their relation to higher categories related to what Dan was just telling us about. And so I'll review that briefly because I want to set up the problem of categorification of knot invariants, which will lead me to the center piece of this talk, which is to talk a little bit about a distinguished set of six-dimensional interacting conformal field theories. And that has recently been applied to Witten to talk about knot homology and relating knot homology to things called BPS states. And then I will talk a little bit about my work at the end because you're supposed to be interested in BPS states because of that. And I'll say a few words about the construction of BPS states in a very interesting class of four-dimensional field theories which are related to duality, groupoids, and modular tensor categories. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about defects. Sort of a definition is that defects are local disturbances supported on positive codimension submanifolds of space-time. So for example, in a zero-dimensional defect is just a local operator. One-dimensional defect is usually called a line operator, even if it isn't an operator on anything. It's better to call it a line defect. So for example, in non-abelian gauge theory, in gauge theory, not necessarily non-abelian, we can take a one-dimensional curve gamma and talk about the parallel transport along that curve or the holonomy around that curve or the trace of the holonomy. And these are things you can put into the path integral and modify the path integral.
What is P?
Path ordered exponent. Just the ordered exponent. The path ordered exponent. Okay. Another thing you can do is in four-dimensional gauge theory, you can specify defects by specifying the singularities of your gauge field in the neighborhood of the defect. And then you can go on and you can make two-dimensional defects. And for example, you could couple a two-dimensional field theory to your ambient field theory that leads to what are called surface operators. And there's been a great deal of activity on that. And then you can keep going until you get to codimension 2, where you have monodromy defects, and codimension 1, where you have domain walls. And a boundary condition can be thought of as a domain wall between theory T and the empty theory. So this theory of defects subsumes the theory of boundary conditions and debrants and all of that. And under good conditions, these defects can be multiplied, leading to generalized notions of the operator product expansion. So, for a simple example, in something called GL twisted n equals 4 super Young-Mills theory, you can take the holonomy, the traces of the holonomy of a gauge field in various representations of the gauge group, and if gamma 1 and gamma 2 are parallel lines and you bring them together, then you'll just discover the representation ring. But in some of these other theories I'll talk about at the end, the operator product expansions of line defects are actually can be thought of as graded vector spaces whose graded traces satisfy skein relations. I'll come back to that at the end. Now, as Dan was telling us, there's a notion of an extended field theory. This is an extension of the idea of Atiyah and Siegel, who were trying to extract the most primitive aspects of locality in quantum field theory in their definition of a topological field theory. And many people have been extending this notion to include manifolds where we're cutting them along higher and higher codimension pieces or gluing together manifolds with corners. Very simple example of that is a 2-1-0 topological field theory. So to a closed 2 manifold, we associate a partition function. To a closed 1 manifold, a vector space, the vector space of states, and to a closed 0 manifold, a category of boundary conditions. And this picture is meant to convey why the boundary conditions form a category. Here's boundary conditions A and B, so there's some state space, and then this picture gives you a way of composing these. And I've explained this in this room many, many times, so I'm not going to dwell on that. But we can go on. we can go on into higher dimensions.
Walls have ears.
So if we go into higher dimensions, then we can see further structure. So here's a picture in an n-dimensional field theory. This is supposed to be a picture of an n minus one-dimensional spatial boundary, and let's label that boundary by some boundary, that boundary condition by some label A. And then if there are codimension 2 defects in the theory, well, they can separate boundary condition A from boundary condition B, and they'll be labeled by some P. And if you are mathematically inclined, you might say, oh, there's an arrow from A to B, and so P is a morphism from A to B. And then if there are codimension 3 defects, well, you can insert those into the codimension 2 defects, and they will be separating the P-type codimension 2 defect from the Q-type, and they'll have labels alpha. And so you could call that a morphism between morphisms, and you can follow this, obviously, downwards. And the conclusion is that the spatial boundary conditions in an n-dimensional extended TFT are objects in an n minus 1 category. Okay, now that's extended topological field theory. Now I want to talk about two general constructions that I'll use in the remainder of the talk. One is a simplified version of Kaluza-Klein reduction. So if we're given an n-dimensional ETFT and a compact manifold of dimension d, then we can define an n minus d dimensional theory, let's call it the Kaluza-Klein reduction along CD, just by saying that F on the lower dimensional manifold is the original theory on the product manifold. Okay, and that makes sense for L from n minus d on down. But we just decided that an n minus d dimensional theory has boundary conditions which form an n minus d minus 1 category. And so that's how you extend this hierarchy. So we have these standard first three steps, and then you can keep going. And in Anton Kapustin's ICM talk, he shows how the k minus 1 category that you would associate to an n minus k manifold can also be thought of as the category of k minus 1 dimensional defects. The other construction I want to talk about is probably less familiar, and it's the notion of a field theory valued in another field theory. So we'll say an m-dimensional field theory is F is valued in an n-dimensional field theory. I chose the fanciest font I could find for that. N, where n is bigger than m, is one where F is, in some sense, an element of H, where on manifolds of dimension up to m. And we'll only need the case where d is 1. And this is already kind of strange. So the partition function, we usually think of a partition function of a field theory, of an m-dimensional field theory on an m-dimensional manifold. We think of it as a number in general. But in this setup, you're supposed to think of it as a vector in a vector space. And an example of this would be the chiral half of a rational conformal field theory. And we'll meet another example in just a moment. So now let's talk a little bit about knot invariance and Turin-Simons-Witten theory. So these, such as the Jones polynomial, are associated with these 3-2-1 extended TFTs. So in three dimensions, we have the three-manifold invariance of Reshetykin, Turiyev, and Witten. For two manifolds, we have a vector space. I think of that as the vector space of conformal blocks in the associated rational conformal field theory. And for one manifold, we have a modular tensor category. And all of this, of course, extends to include line defects. That's how, after all, you get the Jones polynomial associated with a link. Now, a long time ago, Igor Frankl asked, is there an extended four-dimensional field theory whose Kaluza-Klein reduction is this 3-2-1 Turin-Simons-Witten theory? Okay, it turned out to be a very fruitful question. So if you could find such a four-dimensional theory, that would be what we would mean by a knot categorification. The decategorification would be then compactification along the S1. And so we would replace a vector space, a graded vector space, by a number, its Euler character. We would replace a category by its K theory, and so on. In particular, in this case, if you look at the Jones polynomial for a link in R3, that's some finite Laurent polynomial with integer coefficients. And one consequence of giving a categorification would be to provide for the link a vector space, H of L, which I'll call the link homology, which is Z plus Z graded, so that if you take the graded supertrace of that vector space, then you would recover the Jones polynomial. So before I go on and talk about the physicist's response to Igor Frankl's challenge, I should ask in this audience, is it useful for quantum computation? And I certainly don't know. I discussed it with Witten and Gaiato a little bit, and we saw two difficulties, which I'll mention. One is that I want to stress that this H of L is a vector space associated with a link in space. So if you like, the braiding is being done in the spatial direction, not in the time direction. So my understanding of what you guys are doing with quantum computation is you want to take these anions and you want to braid them in time, and that's your action on a qubit. Well, here you would have to... You might imagine doing knot cobordisms in space and using vectors in this space as a qubit, but it's a little different. And the other difficulty is that in the mathematics, there's been a great deal of mathematical work on knot homology, but nobody seems to have thought at all about unitarity. So that's an interesting question for the future. Anyway, physicists have been thinking about this knot homology, and after some breakthrough work by Mikhail Khovanov and others, Gukov et al. Proposed some physical interpretations, and most recently, Witten has written a long paper proposing an interpretation of a physical approach to these knot homologies. Now, these proposals all center around the same thing. The magic here is the existence of an interesting set of six-dimensional superconformal field theories. And these are examples of field theories which are valued in a higher dimensional field theory, again, with d equals 1. And for that very reason, natural sources of knot categorification. So that's the motivation for telling you a little bit about these six-dimensional field theories. So there's a claim based on string theory constructions, which I'm not going to tell you about, but the string theory constructions suggest that there's a family of stable field theories. I'll denote them T of n. N is an integer, 1, 2, 3. And they have six-dimensional conformal symmetry. They're six-dimensional conformal field theories. In fact, they have more. They have superconformal symmetry. And certain characterizing properties, which I'll soon tell you about. And they're not free field theories for n bigger than 1. Now, these theories have not been constructed even by physics standards. But the characterizing properties of these theories, these hypothetical theories, I should say, can be deduced from their relation to string theory and M theory. And these properties, therefore, we'll treat as axiomatic, and we hope maybe someday they'll be theorems. Now, there are related free field theories with this 2-0 superconformal symmetry, which can, in principle, be rigorously constructed. But even this has not been done in full generality. And if you start to think about it, there's some very interesting issues in physics and topology that come up when you try and do this. And I've discussed that with Dan Fried quite a lot. So to give you some sense of these theories, let me just talk about the n equals 1 free field theory, the abelian theory. So the fields consist of a three-form H, five scalar fields, capital I goes from 1 to 5, and four chiral fermions, A goes from 1 to 4. And the scalar fields are free scalar fields. They satisfy the free wave equation. The fermions satisfy the free Dirac equation. The interesting one is H. H is a three-form, a real three-form in six dimensions. It's closed, and it's self-dual. That's something you can do in Tumon four dimensions with Minkowskian signature. And because H is closed, it has associated with it a two-form gauge potential, and that means we can take the holonomy of that gauge potential, and that leads to interesting surface defects. Now, these theories are evidently only defined on oriented spin 6 manifolds, and if you dig a little deeper, there's actually some really interesting topology here having to do with quadratic refinements and Wu structures and so on, but we're not going down that road today. We want to talk about the non-abelian theories, and so let me tell you about six properties that they have. The first is that it's a field theory valued in a seven-dimensional topological field theory, which is a Chern-Simons-like theory based on a three-form gauge potential with level n. And more properly, you should use something called differential cohomology to formulate this seven-dimensional Chern-Simons theory, but again, we're not going down that road today. The second property is that, and this is really crucial, is that when T of n is Kaluza-Klein reduced on a circle, where the circle has radius r with supersymmetric spin structure, then the long-distance dynamics is governed by a five-dimensional Yang-Mills theory with a gauge Lie algebra U of n and a coupling constant G squared proportional to r. So you see, this five-dimensional Yang-Mills theory is not renormalizable. It's not ultraviolet complete. The very non-trivial claim here is that there's an ultraviolet completion of that five-dimensional theory, which is the six-dimensional theory. Now, the third property is that this theory has not a unique vacuum, but a moduli space of vacua. And this is the moduli space of vacua here. N is the n of T of n, and Sn is the symmetric group. And the low-energy dynamics around a generic smooth point in this space is described by n-free tensor multiplets. That abelian theory I showed you before is called the tensor multiplet. And the way you think about this space is that you're just giving vacuum expectation values to all these scalar fields. Remember, there were five scalar fields, and then now there are n tensor multiplets. So that's this space here.
Is that five-dimensional theory up the top mentioned here, is this sort of fine-tuned from a five-dimensional point of view, or it looks pretty generic?
It's a very specific theory. It's the maximally supersymmetric five-dimensional super-Yang-Mills theory. So the most relevant terms are completely constrained. Now, the fourth thing is that there are around, if you look at the excitations around one of these vacua, there are dynamical string-like excitations, not particles, strings, which are simultaneously electric and magnetic, and that has to do with the self-duality of this field H, and so they act as sources for these tensor multiplet three forms. There are surface operators, which are associated with representations of UN, and again, in the infrared limit, they just look like sums of the abelian surface defects, where we sum over the weights of the representation. And then finally, there are mysterious codimension 2 defects, D, and all we need to know for the remainder of this talk is that associated with these supersymmetric defects, D, are certain global symmetries of the theory, G of D. Okay, so now let me say just a few words about what Witten did with knot homology. So he studied these theories, T of N, on a sixth manifold of the form R times W times D, where R is time, D is some manifold with an action of U1 with a unique fixed point, usually called the cigar in the business, and W is a three manifold containing a surface defect at a fixed time, which is some link. That's going to be the link in the link homology, or the knot homology. That link is sitting inside the three-manifold W here. More generally, you could consider a surface defect which is supported on a link cobordism in this four-manifold R times W. And so Witten's program is basically to start in six dimensions and go down to three dimensions and relate this to the Jones polynomial. And because of time,
the surface is on the knot cross-time for all time.
That is correct. I just meant that at a fixed time, it looks like a link in the three-manifold W, and then it evolves in time, and then that's the surface on which we put our surface defect. Okay, now I don't have time to explain the details.
This is some kind of symplectic reduction from 6 to 3?
No, it's much more complicated than that. It's a sequence of very non-trivial tricks, which I'll tell you about later. Those are the slides I just skipped. There are topological twists at various points.
You referenced the radius of some circle, which confused me since I thought you were talking about...
Most of this talk is actually not... Well, I'm not being terribly careful about when I'm talking about topological field theories and when I'm not. This circle S has a radius R.
Yeah.
That's what you're talking about. Here I am most definitely not talking about topological field theory. I'm talking about the real thing. And then that R shows up as something as a proportion. Well, the Yang-Mills coupling constant is squared has dimensions of length in five dimensions, and that length is R. Okay. But in Witten's story, he is going to use topological twists at various points. But what he gets at the end is, what he shows at the end is that there's the path integral of this theory, T of n, on S1 times R3 times D with a surface defect on S1 times L times this fixed point P in D, is indeed equal to the Jones polynomial on the one hand, that's statement A. Statement B is, by the slides I didn't show you, by construction it also turns out to be a graded trace on a Hilbert space of what are called BPS states. And moreover, that Hilbert space he constructs it very explicitly as the cohomology of a Morse-Smale-Witten chain complex, which is defined by explicit four- and five-dimensional partial differential equations, which generalize the equations of flatness, say, of a gauge field. So Witten's answer to Frenkel's question involves the BPS states in the six-dimensional theory T of n. Okay, so now that's supposed to motivate you to be interested enough in BPS states to listen to the last 5 minutes of my talk about BPS states. So in some roughly orthogonal developments in a series of papers that I wrote with Davide Gaiato and Andy Neitzke, we studied these T of N theories on six manifolds of the form M4 times C, where C is a punctured Riemann surface with special these special codimension 2 defects inserted at the punctures. And then you can Kaluza-Klein reduce on this C to produce interesting four-dimensional field theories, which I'll call T of N, C, and D, A. And let me stress that these are not topological field theories. Okay. So they're physical theories with N equals 2 supersymmetry, and they satisfy some nice properties. One very important thing is that the theory only depends on the conformal structure of C. So already it's kind of a generalization of conformal field theory to a Riemann surface C, with conformal just to a Riemann surface C, we're associating a certain four-dimensional field theory. The theory has global symmetries. Those will be important in a moment. Those are the global symmetries associated with the defects at the punctures. And then the BPS states and the supersymmetric line and surface defects all have elegant descriptions in terms of the geometry of this Riemann surface C and coverings of C. So here's the dictionary for U2. Oh, so I'm going to first say a little bit about the geometry of these BPS states, and then I'll address the implications of these first two statements, which are quite interesting and connect to modular tensor categories. Okay, so let's consider the case of U2. So the space of ultraviolet gauge couplings of these four-dimensional theories is the moduli space of complex structures on C. There's also a moduli space of quantum vacua, and that can be characterized geometrically as the space of holomorphic quadratic differentials on C with second-order poles at the punctures, and these complex numbers MA are just part of the data of those defects. Now, anybody who's heard anything about N equals 2 field theories in four dimensions knows that the low-energy dynamics is governed by a certain Riemann surface, or family of Riemann surfaces over the family of vacua, which is called the Zeiberg-Witten Riemann surface. And in this set of theories, the Zeiberg-Witten curve is very simply described. You take the cotangent bundle of C. It has a canonical one-form on it. And you consider the double covering given by lambda squared equals this quadratic differential, and that's the Zeiberg-Witten curve. It's that simple. So now, when you look at BPS states, there's a nice geometrical formulation of those. You have this Zeiberg-Witten differential lambda. It defines a foliation of the Riemann surface C by choosing an angle. And then the BPS states are just the closed curves that you get, or the finite curves, by which I mean a curve connecting two branch points in the double cover. So here's a picture of one of these foliations. These orange curves, these orange points are branch points. And you see for a critical angle, there in this foliation, there'll be some curve connecting these two branch points. And you say, when you see that, you say, oh, ho, there's a BPS state. And the other thing that can happen is you can have a foliation that looks like this, and then at a critical angle, you have a closed curve like that, and that turns out to be a BPS state. And so looking at analogous BPS states associated with line defects leads to a categorification of the algebra of Wilson loop operators acting on state spaces H of C in a modular tensor category. So I think that's something that anybody in this room who's thought about modular tensor categories has probably thought about, right? To a Riemann surface C, you have a space of states. If you look at the Wilson loop operators, they act on that space of states, right? You can insert that in the Riemann surface times time. And so what I'm saying is that to a homotopy class in C, and supposing we have a modular tensor category coming from a quantum group with some representation R, then we have an operator on the Hilbert space of states, on the space of conformal blocks. If we choose a basis for the homotopy classes, then we'll have an operator algebra that looks like this, where these Cijks are Laurent polynomials in Q satisfying some Skein relations. So this has been known since modular tensor categories were invented and from Witten's work long ago. What the six-dimensional theory is giving you now is a vector space, Vijk, so that we can identify these as graded supertraces. Okay, and if you look at analogous BPS states in the presence of surface defects, then it appears to be a promising way to find a categorification of knot invariance on a Riemann surface times R, something which the mathematicians, as far as I can tell, don't know how to do. And so, well, this is work in progress. We'll see where it goes. If the chairman will give me 2 or 3 minutes, then I'll tell you about one last thing. 1 minute? Well, it's a very beautiful, it's a very beautiful thing, so I'll try and do it in 1 minute. Okay, so this is a final interesting connection to modular tensor categories, which is the content of a very beautiful paper of Davide Gaiato, which I want to tell you about. And Gaiato's key idea here is encoded in the slogan, the gauging equals gluing, in the following sense. So I've told you that to a Riemann surface C with defects at the punctures, we associate a four-dimensional gauge theory, four-dimensional field theory, with some global symmetries associated with those punctures. Now, supposing we take two Riemann surfaces, C left and C right, and we focus on two punctures, D left and D right, and they have their global symmetries, G left and G right. Supposing those global symmetries are equal, and we gauge the diagonal G symmetry in there with a gauge coupling constant tau, so we form Q equals e to the 2 pi I tau in the usual way. So then we gauge that, we get a new four-dimensional field theory, right? And Gaiato's statement is that that new four-dimensional field theory is the one associated with the Riemann surface where you glue C left to C right with gluing parameter Q. That's his statement. Okay, so now recall the duality groupoid of a Riemann surface. I shouldn't have done this just before lunch, but we consider decompositions into trinians or pants, together with an embedded trivalent graph. These label asymptotic regions of Teichmuller space. And then morphisms are given by basic BF and S moves, and they can be concatenated to connect these different regions of Teichmuller space. So because of that gauging equals gluing to a Pants decomposition of a surface C, what we get is a presentation of this theory in a weak coupling region as a gauging of certain basic theories, for example, as a specific Lagrangian field theory. And those different Pants decompositions correspond to different asymptotic regions of Teichmuller space, which correspond to the same region of moduli space. And the theory only depends on where you are in moduli space. So it's the same theory presented in two different ways. And for that reason, the edges of the duality groupoid are S-dualities, non-trivial self-dualities of these four-dimensional field theory. That's Gaiato's picture of what S-duality is. And so roughly speaking, there's a generalization of a modular tensor category where the objects are now special codimension 2 defects with global symmetries. The spaces of conformal blocks are replaced by four-dimensional quantum field theories. And I wish I could tell you more, but obviously I can't, both because Nick has stood up and because I don't know, actually, a better way of saying it. This is the news that I came here to tell you about. And, you know, when I go to a foreign country, I try and learn the language. And so I often listen to the news broadcasts trying to pick up a little bit of the language. And it all goes by very fast. And I understand only little bits and pieces of it. And I fear that my talk has been like that for you with my news broadcast. But at least I think we can all agree that the last slide is clear. So happy birthday, Mike.
I have a quick question to Mike. Well, we'll take this new proposal for a quantum computer under advisement.